our international obligations are, amongst others, the Drug and Drug Trafficking Act. And in terms of the Drug and Drug Trafficking Act, it actually prohibits manufacturing and supply of any substances included in Schedule 1 to the Drugs Act, and also the use and possession and dealing in drugs that's included in Schedule 2 to the Act. Chairperson already indicated that in terms of the Drugs Act, Section 63, the Cabinet member responsible for administration of justice may, in consultation with the Minister of Health, basically amend the schedules at will. They can either include substances, delete substances, or amend it otherwise. In terms of Section 63, the Minister effected various amendments to the schedules. That, I think, the first amendment was around about 1996, latest one being that of 28 March 2014. And as already indicated in the judgment, Jason Smith was the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development and others. Constitutional Court declares Section 63 of the Drugs Act unconstitutional and invalid to the extent that it purports to delegate plenary legislative powers to the minister to amend the schedules to the Drugs Act. And the amendments I referred to previously was also declared invalid. And that's the amendments that were affected by the minister in terms of Section 63. By notice in the Gazette. So already indicated, the orders of invalidity was suspended. The deadline will lapse around about 17 December of this year. The aims of the bill is mainly to address the constitutional invalidity of Section 63 and the amendments that the minister affected to Schedule 1 and Schedule 2 to the Drugs Act in terms of Section 63. Clause 1 of the bill repeals Section 63 of the Drugs Act. That's mainly to ensure that any future amendments to the schedule to the Drugs and Drug Trafficking Act must be affected by an Act of Parliament, similar to the bill that's currently before the committee. Clause 2 mainly deals with the substances that's in the schedules to the Drugs Act, and that the minister inserted or amended, or otherwise any other amendment that were affected to those schedules, that was declared unconstitutional and invalid. I'm not going to go through all the substances, it's going to take a long time, but part one of Schedule 1 is amended, and some substances are inserted, amongst others, anthracnic acid, isosafrole, norepinephrine, piperonal, safrole. Schedule, clause two, further also meant part two of schedule one, to include hydrochloric acid, potassium permanganate, sulfuric acid, and toluene in it. A more other amendment that was affected is the exclusion in item two, where the salts of hydrochloric acid and sulfuric acid is excluded from the part of Schedule 1. Part 1 and part 2 of Schedule 1 mainly deals with South Africa's obligations in terms of the 1988 convention, to which I already referred to. That is mainly substances that is very useful to manufacture narcotic drugs or psychotropic substances. Clause 2 further amend part 1 of Schedule 2, and it inserts certain substances in part 1, amongst others, butalbital, caffeine, etc. And the substances that are being inserted is mainly also amendments that were affected by the minister in terms of Section 63 of the Drug and Drug Trafficking Act. There's one deletion of a substance in item one, and that is the substance thalidomide. And there's also amendment to item two of part one of Schedule 2 to include all the homologs of the listed substances in this part of Schedule 2. I'll explain this homolog amendment that were affected to part one of Schedule 2 later on. Clause 2 also substitute part 2 of Schedule 2. It's money also to include some substances that the minister previously deemed necessary to include in part 2 of the schedule. And substances such as butorphanol, itrapine, and analogs in Zipperol, some of the substances that are being included in this part of the schedule. Again, item two to part two of Schedule 2 is amended, amongst others, to deal with the homologs of the substances that is listed in part two of Schedule 2. Clause 2 further amend part 3 of Schedule 2, and it inserts substances in part 1. Some notable substances, amongst others, the synthetic cannabinoids, which is indicated as CP47.497 and variants, also includes the substance MDMA, and nexus is other substance that is being included in this part of Schedule 2. It further amends item 2 to include all the homologs of substances, that's in part 3 in the schedule. And the clause that is added to item 2 reads as follows: all homologs of the listed substances, being any chemical related substance that incorporate a structural fragment into the structure that is similar to a structure of a listed substance, or exhibit pharmacodynamic properties similar to the substances that's listed in this part. And then obviously, unless they are listed separately in any other part of part two of Schedule 2. That is basically the end of the presentation. I must refer to the memorandum of the objects to the bill, which is extremely detailed to assist the committee to consider this bill. Thank you. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Till Roberts, for that presentation. Our members, I'm going to open it up if you have any questions for clarity and or comment that you would want to make based on this presentation. If you can give me an indication. Okay. I don't see any hand, but perhaps maybe I could just ask one question. You know, the fact that we've been given 24 months by the Constitution to deal with this defect in legislation. Perhaps maybe give us an indication in terms of what were the delays in tabling the bill in Parliament, and also, what level of consultation was taken by the department when tabling this bill? If there's still not any other member, then Mr. Roberts, if I can then perhaps hand over to yourself.
Thank you, Ms. Chairperson. Firstly, I must indicate The process to introduce this bill started around about April this year already. One must remember that before a bill can be submitted to Parliament for consideration, there must be a SEIAS, a social economic impact assessment procedure that needs to be followed. After that, the bill must be approved, amongst others, by DEFCOM, then by the JCPS Directors General structure. Must then go to Cabinet, and if we obtain Cabinet's approval, the bill can then be introduced in Parliament. So I believe from April till around about September, that is how long it took us to introduce this bill that is currently before the committee. There was a Director General's meeting that was cancelled, so that delayed it a further month. It took the state law advisors around about, I think, close to a month and a half to consider this bill before we can actually proceed with this, the process. And I must also indicate that from my perspective, there's various problems in the current Drug and Drug Trafficking Act. And the department did try during 2021 to revise the Drug Trafficking Act in whole. A bill was drafted, a complete bill actually, and that was submitted to, amongst others, the South African Police Service, and I did consult with two other experts on the bill. But the problem was that I couldn't get an expert to verify the correct listing of the substances in that bill. So after that, we decided to just address this constitutional issue. We can deal with the revised Drug Trafficking Act at a later stage. This bill was, I think, already kind of in draft form prepared in 2019. But yeah, that's the main delay in the finalization of this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Roberts. Okay, thank you for that, Mr. Roberts. So then perhaps let us move then to the second bill, which is the Land Court Bill, which was also referred to the committee on the 27th of September 2022 for concurrence. And the Land Court Bill proposes to be, or the amended Land Court Bill proposes to establish a specialist land court in respect of the 1994 Restitution Act to address the current backlog in land restitution claims and deal with all land related matters as regulated by legislation, and contribute towards developing appropriate jurisprudence in relation to land matters. Mr. Roberts, let me then, is it yourself as well leading with this? Let me then hand over to the department to take us.
Sorry, it's not myself. Can I leave, Ms. Chairperson? I think it's Mr. Makhlebete from the department who's going to take you through this. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, good morning, Chair, yes. And honorable members. Can you hear me clearly, Chair, if I may check with you on that?
Yes, you're audible.
Thank you very much. Chair, as I've mentioned, my name is Makubela. My surname is Mukubibete. I'm a state law advisor at the Department of Justice. I am not alone in this bill. I've got my colleague, Mr. Hank Dupree, who is working with me on this bill. Chair, I have been tasked to do the briefing on this bill. And I don't know if Chair and honorable members can be able to see the PowerPoint presentation on the screen.
Yes, Yes, we can say it. Please continue.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Chair, as you have already mentioned, in the country, we currently have this land claims court that was established under the Restitution of Land Rights Act of 1994, as mentioned. And this land claims court has exclusive jurisdiction and power in respect of matters relating to land. And as the name of the act states, this this court was more specifically intended to deal with restitution claims as contemplated in the Restitution of Land Rights Act. However, this court also has a concurrent exclusive jurisdictions to start with, to deal with matters arising from the Land Reform Labor Tenants Act of 1996. It also has a concurrent jurisdiction with the Magistrate Court in respect of matters arising from the Extension of Security of Tenure Act of 1997, the so-called ESTA Act. So what we have experienced in practice, Chair, was the lack of permanency of the judges of this court and the absence of the permanent seat of the court. These were the challenges that contributed to the backlogs that we experienced in relation to the processing of restitution claims. And this obviously resulted to the dissatisfaction of land claimants. The current legislative framework existed due to the initial point of departure to the effect that this court was not established to be a permanent court. It was intended to have a limited life span to deal only with restitution of land matters. And at the time it was established under the Restitution Act of 1994, it was decided at that time, Chair, that there was no need for the establishment of a permanent court and the permanent judges for the court due to the fact that it was given a short life span. However, it turned out in practice, Chair, that on the contrary, the restitution process became a protracted one. And even at this stage, as we speak, Chair, we still have the backlogs for restitution matters. And as a result, the slow processing of these matters due to the lack of permanent judges and the permanent court resulted to the backlogs that exist currently in relation to restitution matters. And in order to improve this legislative framework and to address the weaknesses that were identified, it was decided that this bill that should be introduced to establish a specialist land court. And once established, this land court once established, the judgments thereof will be appealable to its full bench. So we will have the land court and we will have a full bench of the land court. I will deal with this during my presentation. And Chair, it was decided that it is better to have this land court, which is properly constituted and capacitated, instead of the current land claims court under the Restitution Act. And this land court should be the forum to deal with all land related matters as regulated by various pieces of legislation. Chair, during the processing of this bill, we have had engagement with various departments, and we have identified various pieces of legislation that relates to land. And I will speak to this later in detail, but I will just want to highlight that we have identified about 33 pieces of of legislation that deals with land, most of which are administered by the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform, and Rural Development. So now, the intention is to have this land court dealing with all land-related matters, instead of this land claims court that deals with only the restitution matters. And also, as I've mentioned earlier, the labor tenant matters and the matters arising out of ESTA. Now, the establishment of the land court will facilitate, Chair, the disposal of the cases. As I've mentioned, we have a backlog, and to contribute towards the development of appropriate jurisprudence in relation to land matters, as Chair has initially indicated. So with this, there will be an accumulation of that jurisprudence that relate to land matters that we need. And this bill will facilitate that in terms of the establishment of the land court. In addition, as mentioned by Chair, this bill introduces also a cheaper and speedier alternative dispute resolution mechanism by way of mediation. However, the bill makes a provision for future legislation to confer jurisdiction on the land court as and when the need arises. And this can be a new legislation or the amendment of current legislation to give the land court a jurisdiction to deal with land matters. The aims of the bill are, in the first instance, to establish a land court with jurisdiction to grant any order, appropriate relief, or impose any sanction as provided for in the bill, or any other law that confers jurisdiction on the court. I pause here to mention that, Chair, amongst those pieces of legislation, the 33 of them that we have identified, if in due course it is decided that a particular piece of legislation needs to be placed under the exclusive jurisdiction of the land court, that can be done by way of amending that particular piece of legislation. It can be either exclusive jurisdiction of the land court or the concurrent jurisdiction of the land court and the magistrate court as well. In the second instance, Chair, the aim of the bill is to establish an appeal process to hear and determine appeals emanating from the judgment and orders of the court, and also, thirdly, to provide for mediation. Chair, this court is established as a court of law. However, in matters under the Restitution Act that I've referred to before, and any act of Parliament that provides for is a court of law and equity. Now, what we are saying here, Chair, is that, especially if I make an example of the Restitution Act, that act did not establish the Land Claims Court as a court of law and equity. It's just established as a court of law. However, one of the provisions of that act requires the court to consider equity when it deals with any particular matter before the court. So what we have done here is to say that those other pieces of legislation that requires the court to consider equity when deciding a matter before it, then that court should be able to apply equitable consideration. So the court is established as a court of law or a court of equity, but only in relation to the Restitution Act or any other act that provides for the court to consider equitable principles when it deals with a matter before it. Chair, this court is a superior court, and it has authority, inherent powers, and standing in relation to matters under its jurisdiction. And it is equal to the status of the division of the High Court. So it is placed, that is the land court, is placed at an equal footing with the High Court of South Africa. Chair, this is a court of record. As a result, its hearings must be conducted in an open court. However, if the court decide otherwise in special circumstances, the court can be closed to the public. The court consists of the judge president, the deputy judge president, and so many other judges as may be determined by the president of the republic. In terms of the current framework under the Restitution Act that established the land claims court, we do have the judge president, and as I've mentioned, we don't have the permanent judges. The judges that sit that preside over the land claims court are either seconded to be the judges of the court, or others are acting judges of the land claims court. So what we are doing in terms of this clause 4 is to establish the permanent judge president and the deputy judge president, and also so many judges that are necessary for the smooth running of this new court, considering the current backlog that we have mentioned in relation to restitution matters. However, this court will be dealing with various pieces of legislation that regulate land. The court will be presided over by a single judge. However, in certain instances, the judge president can decide that the court should be constituted before two or more judges. Chair, the court has a seal that is designed by the president by proclamation in the Gazette, and the custody of the seal will be kept by the registrar of the court. The seat of the court is in Johannesburg. However, the judge president can determine that the sitting of the court be held elsewhere than at the seat of the court whenever it is expedient or in the interest of justice to do so. This court can sit in as many separate courts as the available judges allow. Instead of sitting in one seat of the court that is in Johannesburg, the court can hold its sittings at various separate places, separate court, all at the same time. Chair, clause 7 is a very important clause because it deals with the jurisdiction of the court. As I've mentioned, the court shares concurrent jurisdiction with the magistrate court in respect of all matters that are in terms of the bill or in terms of any other law are to be determined by the court. I did mention that if a specific piece of legislation decides to give jurisdiction to the court exclusively, it can do so, or it can do it concurrently for the court and the magistrate court to have jurisdiction in relation to matters under that piece of legislation. The court chair has jurisdiction in the area of jurisdiction of each division of the High Court. So wherever there is this division, then there will be a sitting of the court, depending on the decision by the minister, who is empowered for the purpose of adjudicating land dispute by notice in the Gazette to define a specific area of jurisdiction of each court if the need arises. The minister is also empowered to increase or reduce the area of jurisdiction of each court when necessary and must appoint one or more places within the area of jurisdiction of the court for the holding of the sittings of the court, other than at the seat of the division of the High Court. And also, Chair, the minister may withdraw or vary any notice that the minister will have made in terms of this clause. By way of an example, Chair, and the intention here is to make sure that the court is accessible to the public As a result, the minister can even determine that a school or a town hall or any other public place be used on a temporary basis, perhaps in this instance, for the holding of a court to deal with a particular matter. So as basically to access justice by the parties. And this may be ideal, especially in rural areas where the courts may be far away from those places. So the minister can determine that the school or any other public place be used for the holding of the sitting of the court. Chair, we have a clause that deals with the appointment of judges. It's a very important clause as well. And the president of the country appoints the judge president and the deputy president of the court. And the president does so on the advice of the Judicial Service Commission. Also acting on the advice of the JSC, but in this sense, also on the advice of the judge president as well. The president may appoint as many judges as is necessary as the judges of the court. And this may be judges who may have been judges of the High Court, that is the existing High Court, when they are appointed to the court. The judge president, the deputy judge president, and all other judges that will be appointed to the court must have expertise in the field of land rights matters. They must be representative in terms of race and gender, and must be fit and proper person who are qualified to be appointed to the land court. Chair, the minister makes appointments on an acting capacity of the judges where there is a vacancy in the office of the deputy president or a judge, or where there is a sufficient reason for appointing an acting judge. And the minister will also determine the term of that acting judge. The judge who are appointed in the court chair, they hold office until they are discharged from active service. Or in some instances, they may resign by written notice to the President of the Republic. The tenure of office, the remuneration and terms and conditions of service applicable to a judge of the High Court are not affected by the appointment or concurrent tenure of office of that judge who is appointed as a judge of the court. So the existing judges will not have their tenure of office affected by the appointment to the land court. Chair, the bill also make a provision for a process that may be issued against the judge president, the deputy judge president, or the judge of the court. Where there's any legal process in the form of a summons, chair, or a subpoena, those processes of court may not be issued except with the consent of the judge president of the court, or if the process is in relation to the judge president, the consent must be obtained from the chief justice. So there won't be any process that can be just issued against the judge president or the deputy judge president or judge of the court without the necessary consent for that process to be issued. So the minister is also empowered to make a further appointment of staff, including the appointment of a manager, assistant managers, a registrar, assistant registrars, and other officials for the court. And this will be appointed in terms of a public service law. The appointment so made by the minister chair must be made in consultation with the judge president of the court. We have also, chair, in this bill, a provision that deals with the assessors in terms of which the court may sit with or without assessors to assist the court in mostly in contested hearings. This will be in an advisory capacity, particularly in relation to factual disputes before the court. However, in any particular matter, chair, there won't be more than two assessors that may be appointed to sit with the court. Chair, Clause 13 provides for the locus standi of any person to institute the proceedings before the court. This clause specifies who can be able to institute proceedings before the court. And once those proceedings have been instituted, Chair, the registrar will be required to refer the matter to the just president in terms of the rules. The rules will provide the process that will be followed by the registrar in this regard for the referral of the matter to the judge president, who is entitled to decide whether that particular matter is the matter that must be heard in court or must be referred for mediation. So if the matter has to go for mediation, the judge president will be required to make an order that directs the registrar of the court to transfer the matter and within the period provided for in the rules to the mediator. So the rules will make a provision for this as to the transfer of the matter to the mediator. Chair, the some relevant factors that the judge president must take into consideration when making a decision on whether or not to refer a matter to the mediator. I'm not listing all of them, but Chair, just to highlight one, the judge president will have to decide or to consider whether the matter has went for mediation or arbitration in terms of any legislation before the court was approached, and also consider the outcome of that mediation or arbitration. Chair, the issue of arbitration maybe needs to be highlighted here because the bill make provision only for mediation. The arbitration in this instance will relate to the pieces of legislation that I referred to, the 33 of them. Some of them do make provisions for arbitration. One instance will be the Labor Tenants Act, which has provision that requires a matter to be arbitrated upon. So if there's a matter that is before the court, then there will be a consideration as to whether that matter has went for arbitration before it went to court. And that will enable the judge president to make an informed decision as to whether the matter should go to court or any other direction. Chair, the bill provides for the rules of the court, and it provides that the Superior Courts Act and the uniform rules apply to the court in relation to the circumstances under which an opinion or oral evidence may be submitted to the court, the suspension or execution of judgment, orders or sentences of the court pending certain applications, petitions for leave to appeal and the prosecution of appeals, the manner and circumstances under which judgment by default can be given by the court, and generally, Chair, any matter which may be necessary or useful to be regulated for the proper dispatch and conduct of the functions of the court. So the rules will provide for this in general terms. There is a provision that we have, Chair, to provide or to require the rules board to make the rules for a party who is involved in an arbitration to apply to the court to stop the existing process of arbitration and to proceed in court instead. Or the rules must provide for the variation or setting aside of a settlement agreement or the setting aside of an arbitration award. So the rules will take care of these aspects. Clause 16, Chair, empowers any person or body with a legal standing to apply to the court for leave to intervene in the proceedings before the court. So if the Chair, a person has an interest in the matters before the court, then they may intervene on condition that they have a locus standi to do so and they have the relevant interest that is recognizable in law. Any party before the court, Chair, can decide to represent themselves or be represented in court by their own legal practitioners at their own costs. However, Chair, If a party cannot afford legal representation out of their own pockets, and Chair, it is in the interest of that party to be legally represented in court, the court must ensure to refer that person to legal aid, for Legal Aid South Africa to consider the granting of legal representation. Chair, in this regard, the Legal Aid South Africa will follow its own protocols that they follow when they consider granting legal representation to a particular person. Chair, there are funds that are available currently that are administered by the Land Rights Management Facility. This is an entity that has been established by the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development. This facility manages the funds that have been earmarked for the provision of legal aid to the indigent in respect of land dispute. So these funds have now been transferred to Legal Aid South Africa so that Legal Aid South Africa can continue to provide legal representation to the indigent in relation to land disputes. Chair, Clause 17 sets out the powers of the court when it hears the appeals and grants the right of to any person aggrieved by the order or judgment of the court, of the magistrate court, to appeal to the land court in accordance with any land-related legislation that will be governing that particular matter, if that piece of legislation confers appellate jurisdiction on the court. When considering appeals, Chair, the court can receive further evidence or remit the case to the court or tribunal of first instance for further hearing. Or, Chair, the court can confirm or amend or set aside the judgment, the order or decision, which is the subject matter of the appeal, and to give any judgment, order, or decision which the circumstances may require the court to give in a particular case. We also have, Chair, the provision that deals with witnesses, evidence, and admissibility of evidence. The clause, that is clause 19 in particular, Chair, empowers the issuing of a subpoena for any person to come before the court to give evidence or to bring any document, any book, or any item that will be necessary to enable the court to get to a justiciable a conclusion. So the clause 19 provides for the subpoenaing of a person or the subpoenaing of certain items. A witness who is subpoenaed before the court, Chair, is entitled to remuneration in terms of a tariff that is prescribed by Section 37 of the Superior Courts Act. Chair, furthermore, there are rules of evidence that have been included in the bill that are relaxed, different from the rules of evidence in other courts. In this regard, Chair, the bill empowers the court to admit evidence, particularly in claims under Restitution Act, including oral evidence, which it considers relevant and cogent to the matter being heard before the court, whether or not such evidence will be admissible in any other court. For instance, Chair, the admissibility of hearsay evidence. The court can admit such hearsay evidence on the circumstances surrounding the dispossession of land right and the rules governing the allocation and occupation of land within the claimant community at the time of the dispossession. Chair, we also have a clause that deals with the process of court. And clause 22 thereof provides that the process of court runs throughout the Republic and its sentences, rulings, judgments, writs, summonses, orders, warrants, commands, and other processes must be executed by the sheriff or the deputy sheriff who is assigned to execute those processes in the particular area of jurisdiction. And these processes will be carried out in the same manner as the carrying out of the processes that have been issued by the A Division of the High Court. Clause 23, Chair, creates offenses punishable by a fine or imprisonment of up to a period of 1 year of any person who commits a conduct referred to in Section 46 of the Superior Courts Act relating to the execution by the sheriff or deputy sheriff of their duties. It is an offense, Chair, under Section 46 of the Superior Courts Act to obstruct the sheriff when they are executing their duties in terms of any law. So it is an offense to obstruct the sheriff or the deputy sheriff when they carry out their duties in terms of any law of the country. The court chair has all powers that a division of the High Court has in civil proceedings. If the court considered is to be in the interest of justice, it may even decide any issue in terms of any other law, which issue is not ordinarily within its jurisdiction, but is however incidental to an issue within its jurisdiction. Chair, in a nutshell, we are saying here the court can deal with the court with an issue that is not, that does not fall within the jurisdiction of the court, but can be able to deal with that if it is an incidental to a matter that is before the court. So the court cannot just discard an issue just because it does not fall within its jurisdiction. Of course, the issue must be incidental to the issue before the court, for the court to be able to entertain its jurisdiction in relation to that issue. Chair, the court also has the power to reserve any question of law that arises in the proceedings for the decision of the Supreme Court of Appeal, Chair. And in that event, the court can make an interim order. There are those matters, Chair, that may require, in certain instance, a decision that will set a precedent by the Supreme Court of Appeal. This provision provides for that. Chair, we have a clause that provides that any suspicion or allegation of corruption during the court proceedings may have to be referred to the relevant authority for investigation. So any matter of corruption cannot be just swept under the carpet by the court. Instead, the court must act proactively in that by referral to the relevant authorities. Chair, we have a provision that relates to the conferences, normally called pretrial conferences in the High Courts. Clause 25 entitles the court to convene a pretrial conference for the purpose of simplification of the issues that are in dispute before the parties, the limitation of a number of expert witnesses to be called at court, or such other matters may aid in the disposal of an action in the most expeditious and least costly manner. So this is just to bring the parties together for the purpose of simplification of the disputes before the court, so as to expedite the finalization of the matter, and as a result, to save costs. A party chair who refuses or neglects to attend the conference may be penalized by the court, as may be equitable in the circumstances. This may include the penalization of that party with costs that were incurred as a result of the failure of that party to attend the conference. Chair, clause 26 sets out the various orders that the court can make and may, for instance, at any stage after the dispute has been referred to the court, and where it becomes apparent that it will advance the finalization of the case if some or all of the disputes between the parties are referred to mediation. The court can do so, can refer that matter for this for mediation, and consequently stay the proceedings and refer that dispute to mediation. The court may, of its own accord or on application by the affected party, vary or rescind its decision, judgment, or order. And the clause, that is clause 27, specifies which categories or types of judgment that may be rescinded by the court. Chair, the issue of costs is dealt with by clause 28, which provides that when granting the costs, the court may consider whether the matter ought to have been referred to mediation or arbitration. And also the court may consider or take into account the conduct of the parties during the proceedings before the court. We have a specific clause dealing with mediation, Chair. The presiding judge during the proceedings is given the powers when it becomes evident to that presiding judge that there is any issue which must be resolved through mediation. That presiding judge may direct the parties to attempt to settle the issue through mediation, and as a result, the court may stay the proceedings until the conclusion of such mediation process. Chair, the Rules Board for Courts of Law is given the power to make rules that will regulate various aspects relating to the process of mediation. Chair, if the parties are not able to resolve their dispute, or one or more of the parties to the mediation so request, they are empowered, Chair, to request the mediator to refer the matter to the court for adjudication. And the rules will provide for the process to be followed in doing this. If a matter is settled out of court, the court may confirm the settlement agreement and makes it an order of court. This is clause 29 of the bill, Chair. In terms of clause 31, Chair, an appeal against a decision of the court sitting as a court of instance lies upon leave having been granted. If the court was presided over by a single judge, the appeal will lie either to the Supreme Court of Appeal or to the full court of the land court. Chair, the full court is defined in clause one of the bill as a court constituted of three judges. So an appeal from the land court will go to the full court, that is before three judges, if that matter was presided over by a single judge. Or in the alternative, it can go direct to the Supreme Court of Appeal. However, if the appeal relates to a matter that was presided over before more than one judge, the matter goes directly to the Supreme Court of Appeal. Therefore, it doesn't go to the full court that consists of three judges. The appeal against any decision of the full court lies to the Supreme Court of Appeal upon a special leave having been granted by the Supreme Court of Appeal. So if a matter goes to the Supreme Court of Appeal, there must be a special leave granted by the Supreme Court of Appeal itself. Chair, a judge is prohibited from sitting at the hearing of an appeal against a judgment or an order given in a case that was heard before that judge. So the judge cannot sit in the land court, and when the matter goes to the full bench, then that judge cannot sit in the full court hearing that appeal. Chair, the rules must provide also for the processes that must be followed when the court hears appeals against judgment and orders of other courts. Chair, we have a general a provisions clause that is contained in chapter 6. These provisions, Chair, are of a standard nature. General provision applicable to court, this are contained in clause 33. We have a transitional arrangement, which is clause 34, the amendment of laws, clause 35, and the regulations that are contained or provided for in clause 36. And clause 37 is the short title of the bill. So just to highlight one significant transitional measure that we have included in the bill is that a judge of the court of the High Court, who on the date of commencement of the act was seconded or appointed as a judge of the Land Claims Court, becomes a judge of the court, unless such judge indicates in writing to the secretary of the Judicial Service Commission that that judge does not wish to hold a concurrent appointment as a judge of the court. Chair, I did indicate during my presentation that the Land Claims Court does not have permanent judges. Instead, the judges thereof are either seconded or appointed on an acting capacity. So those judges, in terms of this clause, upon the operationalization of the bill, are going to be the judges of the Land Court unless that judge indicates that they do not want to be judges. Chair, as I mentioned, clause 35 deals with the amendment of laws, and these are contained in the schedule to the bill to give the court, that is the Land Court, exclusive jurisdiction, or in some instances, the jurisdiction is given to the Land Court and the Magistrate Court concurrently to adjudicate the dispute emanating from the application of those land-related legislation. Chair, you will see in the schedule to the bill, we have selected only 9 pieces of legislation that we are seeing immediately upon the operation, the coming into operation of the act. They must be either under the exclusive jurisdiction of the Land Court or concurrently under the jurisdiction of the Land Court and the Magistrate Court. The schedule itself shows how we have effected those amendments so as to give the court and the Magistrate Court the necessary jurisdiction. The 9 pieces of legislation, Chair, we have selected was to ensure that we do not inundate the court, especially when it is established for the first time. So we do not want to overburden the court with all pieces of legislation at the same time when it comes to operate. So we are going to adopt an incremental approach in terms of which further pieces of legislation are going to be inserted, are going to be amended to give the court exclusive jurisdiction or concurrent jurisdiction with the Magistrate Court. Chair, clause 36 provides for the regulations that must be made by the minister. And clause 7 provides for the short title and commencement of the bill. Chair, this concludes my presentation, and I'm open for questions, points of clarity, and I'm not sure, Chair, if the chair will want to give my colleague, Mr. Henk Dupré, an opportunity if there's any clarity or any remark that he would like to present to the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mokulubete. Perhaps Mr. Dupré can come in if he wants to comment on questions, if any that members may have. Members, I'm sure you wouldn't agree more with me that this is a very important bill, land court bill, in that it would speed up and deal with current backlogs in land restitution claims, as well as deal with all land-related matters as regulated by legislation. Can I perhaps get an indication from our members if you have any comment to make and or any questions for clarity? Any member? Okay. Perhaps just from my side, I just have made perhaps two issues. The one is around the financial implications. While you have indicated that the judges that were part-time would now probably be permanent, but given that the bill provides for the establishment of a court, what about the appointment of other officers in the court and whether there's any other cost implications in terms of the implementation of this bill? And I see Honorable Dodobo, your hand is up, perhaps, and Honorable Mthethwa in that order. Honorable Dodobo? Honorable Dodobo?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm sure you won't mind if I don't switch on my phone. There is a problem of load shedding where I am, and it may distract me. And I want to make some concrete comments and ask some few questions.
Please,
Honorable. Yes. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Firstly, I think let's welcome the report and the presentation that is before us. It's a good presentation. It is indeed refreshing. We welcome that. This matter of the land court is long overdue. My wish is that it must be fast-tracked after the NCOP process. It must be taken to the president for assenting his signature, must be the law, because it is long, long overdue, given the fact that land, the land question is very much important. But two, Honorable Chair, I think we must criticize ourselves, all of us, as government and parliament and the country, that all of these processes should have been unfolded very, very long time ago. They weren't unfolded. As a result of that, there's been just a delayed process, a slow process in terms of effecting restitution processes. I think the report that came 2 years ago was indicating that only about 8% of the land was restituted to the original owners, or it was settled in that way. And there's been huge backlogs in terms of facilitating this process. And I see this land court going to assist the Commission on Restitution to fast track the whole processes so that this matter gets settled. Communities who were displaced or whose land was dispossessed in the past, it must be accordingly restituted, or there must be compensatory processes that unfold to settle that particular matter. What impressed me about this process, Chair, is the fact that other than the normal court process, there would be arbitration and mediation processes unfolding on the side, or the court can instruct that the matter be taken for mediation or arbitration, which is very, very good. And it enhances the access to the court by poor communities or communities in the rural area. This is very good. And for the very fact that this court may not only sit in its headquarters, but it can go to rural communities, schools, community centers, and all of that. It's very, very good because these communities are the ones who are actually affected by issues of land dispossession, and therefore they need some reparation or restitution. My worry that I want to raise is the fact that the court can decide that the matter be heard, or that in case that there are problems of legal representation, the matters can be referred to the legal aid board. But we all know that the lawyers at the level of the legal aid board are not strong, and they send people who are not well averse of the issues. And as a result of that, complainants or victims are not properly represented in that particular instance. Then my question would be, would there be a specific training for lawyers at the level of the legal aid board to be trained around land issues so that they understand deep this land issue, so that their capacities must be enhanced and be improved to represent people at those particular levels? For me, this is quite important, given what we normally see in our own experiences with regard to the lawyers from the legal aid board. And my question is that, would there be some concomitant action taken to capacitate and enhance their capacity to deal with those particular issues? For me, that is quite important. But also lastly, Chair, what is very good is that lawyers at the level of the land court will be permanent. This has been a very, very big problem. I don't understand where I see it. Why, as a country, did we not foresee this, that we thought that the restitution process will be so quick, so speedy, to an extent that all the judges are not permanent at the level of the current land claims court? For me, this is unacceptable. Land was robbed from our people from 1652, and we can tell stories about land dispossession in this country. And something that we should have done immediately was to ensure that we put up the necessary systems and structures in place to ensure that restitution, as one of the mechanisms of land reform, happens, and it happens to the advantage of people who, for over centuries, their land was dispossessed. And for me, this is a small criticism I'm making, but I'm happy that we are ameliorating it, we are addressing it with the promulgation of this land court bill, that at the end of the day, these systems will be put in place. But I don't understand why didn't they just from the outset anticipate that land is an issue at the heart of the political and socioeconomic struggle of our country, and therefore it needed to be given the priority that it deserved. But I'm happy that at the end of the day, we'll have permanent appointment of judges. Both courts, the land court and the land appeals court, will both have the judge president as well as the deputy judge president and other judges who serve on permanent basis. Other than this, Honorable Chair, I'm quite happy, and I just wish that this process is expedited for the benefit of our own communities. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Dobu, for those comments, well, as those two questions. Honorable Mteto? Well, let me take Honorable Motomai. Honorable Motomai, because your hand keeps coming up after honorable members have spoken.
Chairperson. Chairperson, this is one of the strongest bill that I support, and the EFF support it. And I'm very happy that are now moving and consider that there are people who are suffering for rob their land by those who are now enjoying that privilege. Chairperson, I just want to say we are very happy that the court of law, they are going to assist the masses, the majority, upon this issue of the land. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. My comment. Honorable Dodobo, perhaps if you and Honorable Motsamai can mute your mics for now. Thank you. Honorable Mteto.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Let me also join those that welcomes the report. It's quite progressive. It's going to assist us going forward. But my question is, Chair, is that, you know, there are a lot of people, especially the lawyers, that have been claiming to assist the poor, claiming them, charging them a lot of money. Now that there will be full-time judges, and also we are expecting some advocate in that space, how is this going to assist, especially to those that will be saying will continue to rob the poor, claiming that they are dealing with this matter when now we've got this legislation? How is this bill going to assist them? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mteto. Okay, sorry, members. I'm just having a little bit of trouble with my gadget. Okay, great. Thank you very much, Honorable members, for those comments and questions. I just wanted to ask, maybe just if we could get more information as well. In terms of the two main amendments that were made by the Portfolio Committee. And it's in our understanding that they dealt with the removal of arbitration as an alternative dispute resolution and removal and substitution of a land court of appeal provision. If you could perhaps give us, give the committee an overview of the key amendments that were made to the bill as well by the National Assembly. I think with that said, let me then hand over back to you, Mr. Mokulubete, perhaps then to take us through responses, if there are other policy matters that you're unable to deal with, as I've indicated at the opening of the meeting, that in our next engagement as well with the Minister and with the Deputy Minister, we will deal with some of these matters. Mr. Mokulubete, over to you. And if you wish for Mr. Dupre to respond to certain issues, please feel free to do so.
Thank you very much, Chair. I will try to deal with the simple ones, perhaps, and leave the difficult ones to Mr. Dupre, because he's able and capable to deal with the complex questions, Chair. Chair, to start with, you raised an issue of financial implications. The bill was sent for costing to our costing unit, and a costing report was prepared. And indeed, as you correctly mentioned, Chair, the bill attracts a huge financial implications in terms of the appointment of judges and other staff that will be appointed by the minister. Indeed, these attract financial implications. So we have a costing report that shows how much is going to cost for the establishment of this court, with the view to allocate funds for the establishment of the court. Chair, I do not know if the chair will want us to circulate that to the committee. I do not foresee a problem with that. It was served, it served before cabinet, when we went to cabinet for the approval to introduce. That report was attached to the documents that served before the cabinet. Chair, the issue of the removal of April, I will leave for Mr. Dupre, Chair, to deal with the issue of legal representation, as raised as a worry, by Mr. Mthethwa, that the lawyers who seem to be robbing the poor people and giving a disservice to those poor people. I will request Mr. Dupuy to come in on that. But on the issue of the appeal and arbitration, indeed, Chair, the bill that served before the committee, the portfolio committee, did have a provision for arbitration and the establishment of a special land court of appeal. Now, the bill was published for public comments, and many commentators there were totally against the inclusion of the provision dealing with arbitration. Chair, they've seen that as an extra layer that was unnecessary. Instead of the matters being finalized at court, the judge president was given the power to refer the matter for arbitration, whereby the parties are going to incur further legal costs. And in the failure of that arbitration process, the matter will still have to go to court. So it was seen as an unnecessarily burdensome extra layer that was created. And we were agreeable to say that it will not be a train smash if we do not provide for arbitration in this bill. Because, Chair, as I've mentioned in my presentation, there are pieces of legislation that requires the matters be resolved firstly by arbitration. And also, Chair, there is this arbitration act that exists that the parties can rely on to undergo the process of arbitration before they go to court. So it was mainly on the opposition, Chair, to the clause, and we ultimately agreed to take it out of the bill. Secondly, Chair, the appellate structure. Indeed, the bill that served before the committee, the portfolio committee, did have an extensive, actually a chapter that deals with the appeals. So we were creating a specialist appellate structure within the bill itself. Now, the challenge to that was also the creation of an extra layer of appeal, whereas there is an existing Superior Court of Appeal that can be used as a structure to deal with matters or appeal from the land court. And the complexities with that, Chair, was that it will have necessitated the amendment of the Constitution. Chair, in terms of Section 166 of the Constitution, the courts of the Republic are the Constitutional Court, the Supreme Court of Appeal, the High Courts, and the Magistrate Court, in that order. Now, the establishment of the Land Court of Appeal did not have a constitutional mandate in as far as the Constitution is concerned. And in order to give it that mandate, there was a need then to amend the Constitution so as to provide for the establishment of the appellate structure. You'll recall, Chair, there is a provision in the Constitution, I can't recall, I think Section 183, that provides for the appeal structure in relation to labor matters and the competition matters. Those are provided specifically in the Constitution, and for the land, there was no constitutional provision to empower us to establish this. Although it is debatable that there is a provision that will empower this, we were agreeable to say that there is no harm for the appeals to go directly to the Supreme Court of Appeal, because it is a structure that has been existent for a long time and will be able to deal with these matters, except that there will be a huge inflow of land matters to the Supreme Court of Appeal, owing to the fact that there will be a capacitated land court, thereby many matters that are comprising the backlogs that exist now are going to be dealt with speedily, and they're going to go to the Supreme Court of Appeal in huge numbers. However, we do not doubt that the Supreme Court of Appeal will still be able to deal with that influx. And as a result, Chair, we agree that there's no harm in taking out the chapter that deals with the exclusive jurisdiction of the court. Chair, can you still hear me?
Yes, please continue.
I think I'm getting cut. Sorry about that. Yeah. So we are agreeable to delete the chapter that establishes this specialist appellate structure. Going to the next.
Mr. Mukulovich, are you still with us? Mr. Mukulovich, I think perhaps he's having
practitioners.
Mr. Dupree, are you still on the platform?
I am, Madam Chair. I don't need to really, at this stage during the briefing, answer all your questions. I think we should work through these things, but the question about legal representation, I honestly cannot answer that question, because it's up to the legal aid board how they appoint the legal representatives. But I trust that they will appoint legal representatives who are knowledgeable in the field of land reform. And I'm sorry, I'm giving you a straight answer.
sorry, Chair, I got cut. I am back. Chair, can I continue?
Taken off the platform. Our members, can you hear me?
Yes, Chair.
Okay. I'm not sure what happened, but be that as it may, our members, I want to assume that both Mr. Mukulubete and Mr. Dupree had responded to the questions. Okay, but are they still on the platform?
Yes, Chair, I'm still here. Sorry, I think that my network became weak, and I somehow got cut off the meeting. And it was at the stage where I believe even my colleague, Mr. Dupree, did indicate that the issue of the capacitation of the lawyers within the Legal Aid South Africa is the matter that may ideally be dealt with by that office, because obviously we might say something that will not be the case if we try to even respond to that, and our apologies to be unable to give a proper response in relation to this issue. I hope, Chair, there's one last question, Chair, that was raised regarding the recalcitrant lawyers, I believe. Chair, my connection is very weak. I do apologize for that. Chair, you'll remember I did mention in the briefing, in the presentation, that the court is empowered to refer any issue of corruption, specifically corruption, that will crop up during the proceedings before the court. The court is empowered to refer the issue of corruption to the relevant authorities to deal with. However, with regards to the lawyers, depending on whether it is an issue of corruption, if it is not, then the court is still empowered in terms of the Legal Practice Act, which establishes the Legal Practice Council to deal with the conduct of legal practitioners. Chair, I do believe, I can't refer to a specific clause, but I do believe the court will be empowered to refer a particular legal representative or legal practitioner to be dealt with in accordance with the Legal Practice Act. Chair, that's all the questions that I have noted at this stage. Thank you.
No, that's fine. Thank you very much, Mr. Mokulubeti and Mr. Dupriya, for your responses. But I think this is not the end of our process in terms of engagement on this bill. Let me thank you very much and we'll release you from this meeting. But also to indicate to honourable members that we will proceed to advertise both bills for public comment. And obviously we will bear in mind the Constitutional Court deadline in relation to the drug trafficking bill. But obviously we will also ensure that due process is followed to ensure that we complete the bill and complete the bill timely. No, thank you very much. I think the officials from the Department of Justice you released from the platform, we will, I'm sure in future meetings, still engage with the executive on some of the comments and all issues that were raised. Thank you very much. Our members are going to then move
Thank
on
you very
to,
much, Chair.
Thank you. We're going to move on to the next agenda item, which is the adoption of reports. The first report these reports are relatively short, but the first report is in relation to the International Convention on the Suppression and Punishment of the Crime of Apartheid, which was adopted by the General Assembly of the United Nations on the 30th November 1973 and stabled in terms of Section 231, Subsection 2 of the Constitution, 1996, and the memorandum. And I think the report is reflected, thank you, Gershon, on the screen. If you can go down, Gershon. Our members would have already received a copy of these reports. Maybe if we could just go to the recommendation, Gershon. Well, let me ask members if you, okay, in terms of our recommendation, having considered the International Convention on the Suppression and Punishment of the Crime of Apartheid adopted by the General Assembly of the UN on the 30th November 1973, tabled in terms of Section 231, Subsection 2 of the Constitution, and the explanatory memorandum to the convention.
Recording in progress.
The report, thank you, honorable members, the report is duly adopted. We'll then move on to the third report in terms of our agenda, which is the oversight report on the Park Road Police Station. Honourable members, I want to assume that the report is relatively long I want to assume that you've also been through the report and you may have picked up any corrections and or additions that you may have wanted to make to this report. Maybe Gershwin, if we could go to the towards the end with regard to our recommendations. There's a lot of observations that are made throughout the report, honorable members, especially in terms of our questions that we raised with the department, but then just in terms of our recommendations, that the Department of Public Works should engage the contractor in terms of prioritizing the building of detention facility cells, as the issue was depleting the fuel budget of the station and the festive season was around the corner, that the generator capacity of the station should be dealt with as a matter of urgency before the end of the calendar year, that the management of the Park Road Police Station should provide members of the Community Policing Forum with training to be able to service community members and assist SAPS in fighting crime, that the Department of Public Works should provide the committee with the forensic report on the previous two contractors that were paid for having done nothing at the Park Road Police Station, and the provincial commissioner and a management team should come up with mechanisms on how to deal with the issue of the station having to transport detainees to and from different correctional facilities located as far as Kroonstad and Kimberley. This situation is hampering services to the community, as those members who are responsible for transportation are not working within the community. Our members, if there are any additions that you would like to make to the report. Okay, if there are none. Oh, okay, Honorable Mikulaki, so my apologies, I haven't looked at.
No problem, thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to propose an addition there. We have seen that the work that was done by the third and current contractor was on standard, it was good, and they've been making good progress. From what I understood at our meeting over there was that there is, however, a dispute currently between the department and the contractor, which I don't think the report touches on completely, and that is the fact that the Development Bank of South Africa has caused some delays in the payment and the progress of the contract, which has led to escalating costs and ultimately a dispute between the DBSA, the department, and the contractor. I do think that we would do well just to make an addition to say that where the DBSA or the department were responsible for delays on their part, that they should acknowledge this and that they should do everything within their powers to, in reasonable terms, accommodate the contractor in as far as the contractors have done work that were that was on standard. I do think that currently that is causing the delays, and with the report as it stands without that addition, I don't think we're going to, from our side, be making any helpful additions to try to move the process on. So I would just propose the insertion of a paragraph saying that where the department and the DBSA were responsible for delays on their part, to acknowledge this and to try and accommodate and meet the contractor so that this dispute can be resolved and they can make further progress. It has also been the cause for some delays over the past few months, which I fear if we don't address it, those delays might continue. So that would just be my proposal for an addition. But other than that, I move that we adopt the report. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you for that, Honourable Mikulaki, because I think it did come up and I think it should have been within our observations. It might not have come up formally in the meeting, but I know as we were walking around, the matter did come up. But also that the legal team of DBSA, as well as representation from the Department of Public Works, were present to try and sort out this issue. with regard to the late payment and the escalating costs. So I think we should perhaps add that as well, Gershwin, to the report. I think with that amendment then, honorable members, would you want to adopt the report now, or should we make this amendment and then move for the adoption? Honorable Maleka?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we can adopt the report with the amendment.
Are you moving for the adoption? Thank you, Honorable Maleka. Any second?
I'll second, Chair.
Dongeni, Chair.
Yes, thank you. Lucky Sin on the second report. Are there any objections? Okay, none. Report is due. Dongeni, okay, I see you've muted yourself. Thank you very much, our members. The report is hereby adopted. We'll then move on to the minutes. Of the committee, the minutes dated the 15th of June. Okay, honourable members, this meeting took place on the 15th of June, 2022, and in terms of that meeting, we received a briefing by the Department of Justice and Corrections Services. On the draft notice on the determination of remuneration for Constitutional Court judges and judges, and on the draft notice determination of remuneration for magistrates. We also considered the report of the committee in the same meeting and of both issues. We also received a briefing by the, Kashmir, you're going so fast. Well, the fourth agenda item, we received a briefing by the Department of Police on the Criminal Law Forensic Procedures Amendment Bill. Our members, I want to assume that once again, it's a three pages of minutes. If there are any additions and or corrections you would want to make to the minutes. Can I put it to you, our members, if you would want to move for the adoption and or make corrections?
I'll move for the full chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Bartlett. Any second? Honorable Maleka?
A second, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. We'll then move on to the next set of minutes, dated the 10th of August, 2022. Okay, and in this meeting, honorable members, we received a briefing by the Department of Police on the public comments to the Criminal Law Forensic Procedures Amendment Bill. We also received a briefing by the department in preparation for our Free State oversight on the state of police services in the Free State province. Honorable members, if there's once again any amendments and or additions you would like to make, corrections rather, that you would like to make to the minutes, please indicate. If members are happy with the minutes of the meeting and would like to adopt the minutes, please indicate. On Maleka.
Thank you, Chairperson. I move for the adoption of the minutes as the true reflection.
Thank you very much, Honorable Maleka. Any second?
I second.
Thank you very much, Honorable Dudobu. We'll then move on to the next set of minutes dated the 24th of August. In this meeting, honourable members, we dealt with the Criminal Law Forensic Procedure Amendment Bill report. We considered and adopted. We deliberated on the bill and we adopted the report, the committee report. I think this minute should be relatively short. Honourable members, if there's any corrections, amendments, corrections, and or move for adoption, please indicate. Honourable members, these are largely our proceedings, so yeah. On my left, I see your mic is open. On members, is there any member that would want to move for the adoption of the report?
Chairperson, I was present at this meeting. I'm not sure if that's good. Yeah.
You moving for the adoption?
I was present at the meeting and then moved for the adoption, yes.
Thank you very much, Honorable. I see you were present.
Yeah.
You're correcting that. Okay, we'll make that correction. Moving to adoption. Any second?
Seconded.
Thank you very much, Honorable Motsumai. Members, we just have two more sets of minutes, if you could bear with me. The minutes dated the 7th of September, 22. Question is, there's such a minute. 7th of September, okay. And in this meeting, honorable members, we dealt with the, we dealt with the ratification of the agreement between concerning the ITSA fund for the alleviation of poverty and hunger, as well as the protocol to the Constitutive Act of the African Union relating to the Pan-African Parliament. We adopted it's fine, honorable members. Once again, I think honorable Demo just reminded me as well in terms of attendance. I think we received an apology from Honorable Ndongeni, from Maleka, Zandamela, we're not present as well in that meeting. So is there any addition and amendment honorable members would want to make correction? If not, any mover for the adoption that was present in the meeting?
I move, Honorable Chairperson.
I move for the adoption of the minutes.
I take it that Honorable Ndongeni will second Honorable Bartlett's move. Thank you. We'll then move to the final minutes, Honorable Members. Honorable Ndongeni. Arun Nageri? Okay. Thank you. The 21st of September.
Sorry, Chair, about that. I'm sorry.
Okay. Let's then just move on to the minutes of the 21st of September. That's when we received a briefing on the two international conventions that we adopted today. And we also adopted the reports on the two agreements and protocol, the agreement and the protocol in terms of the Department of International Relations. And I think once again, I think Honorable Galates was not present in the meeting. Honorable Hadeli. And also Mrs. Honorable Saliku was Honorable Dudul, the four members were not present in that meeting. If there's any correction members would like to make and or addition, and if not, any mover? Okay. for the adoption of the minutes. Honorable Matamai.
I move.
Thank you very much, Honorable Matamai. Honorable Dengo.
I second that, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, all members. I think the minutes are then duly adopted. We've actually come to the end of our agenda, all members. Thank you very much for your attendance and for participation in this meeting. And let me also then declare this meeting closed. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Chairperson, if I may just say that the reason why I could attend the meetings recently is that Transport that cancelled or postponed or rescheduled their meetings. In the future, I may face the same difficulty once again of having to be present in two places at one time.
Thank you. We have your issue, Honorable Dengo, but thank you very much. I think the best thing would be is that you just inform the Secretariat in terms of availability. If you have an apology, please indicate to the Secretariat.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member.
Thank you.
Yeah.